And welcome everybody on this, first breakout session. My name is Marcel de Vries. I work for a company called InfoSupport in Venendaal in the Netherlands. I'm a Microsoft MVP for Visual Studio ALM. I keep calling it a team system, but I shouldn't. And today this talk will be all about Team Foundation Build. And I want to take you through a journey where we first start off getting down to the basics so that everybody has a good understanding of what the basics are. And you need that before I can dive into the more advanced stuff. Okay, so bear with me. I will go to a small overview. But it's really necessary, in my opinion, to know how the build is constructed, where stuff is handed over to different parts of the build system before we can start doing some advanced stuff and start tweaking the templates where we work with Team Foundation Build. Okay, so I go through the basics, and then I'm going to change the templates, build own activities, build custom type UI editors, and also add additional sections to the build report, which are coming inside Visual Studio Team System. So I hope you find that attractive enough to stay for the talk. So Team Build 2010 is again a whole new revamp of the Team Build environment. So the first version in 2005 was all about MS Build, and they built it in a team in India. The next time around in 2008, they completely rebuilt that engine, and they rebuilt the whole set of scripts also using MS Build. But one of the main asks in 2008 is, I would love to see a visualization of how my build works. And there's this technology in .NET which can provide that for you, which is called Windows Workflow Foundation. So what the team decided to do is do it for the third time over. So now it should be good, right? The third time is the best, so let's hope it will keep that way. And they based it completely on Windows Workflow Foundation. So that means that the whole orchestration of the build is done in Windows Workflow Foundation, but actually the build steps, so like doing a compile or building a resource or copying files, that stuff is still handed over to the MS Build engine. So there are two parts in play here. We first have the Windows Workflow Foundation, and that will hand off stuff to MS Build to do the actual work. So within 2010, there's this whole new infrastructure in place where we have the notion of a Team Foundation server, which we had for many, many years. But now they introduce this new notion of what we call a Team Project Collection. I will short it to TPC. So when I talk about TPC, I mean a Team Project Collection. Then we have the notion of controllers. And we have the notion of agents. And in the previous versions, we also had agents. They kind of have the same thing they need to do today, but there's now this controller in between that can divide work to different agents on different machines. And that's where they created the concept that we can create a whole build rig if we want to, and again push builds to different machines just by availability, and it can select even the particular build machine that's required for you. Based on, for example, some tags you can set. For example, I need a build machine with Office installed. Well, you can just pick and specify that in your build definition, and the controller can pick the right agent for you, and then that way it can just, go and find that particular server in your build rig. So there are some namings going on here. So the Team Foundation server is the whole thing, and I will create a little picture later on where you can see how that fits in the whole picture. But the Team Foundation server itself is constructed out of an application tier and a data tier. Okay, the data tier is just the database and where all the data stuff is in there. And then we have the application tier, which is a layer of web services that provide all the services on top of the data engines. Okay, the Team Project Collection, I would kind of compare it to a little Team Foundation server. So it's more that you now have one big Team Foundation server that can have multiple instances running, which can be different Team Project Collections. Okay, and they can host team projects within a Team Project Collection. So there's a hierarchy going on there. So the build controllers are scoped to a particular TPC. That means that if we create multiple team project collections, we require multiple controllers, and that might require you to have additional machines as well, because without a hack, which is pretty well documented, but without that hack, you cannot install two controllers on the same machine. Okay, so one of the things you need to be aware of when you construct a whole environment where you want to set up your build. And the build agent is kind of the guy that does the actual work. So we have this whole set of organization and management in place, and then we have finally the guy doing the work, that's the agent, okay? And he gets his work from a controller. Let's go forward, that's better, I think. So the TFS infrastructure, just to create a mental picture here, is the TFS server is constructed out of an application tier, and you can have multiple. So you can, these days, create multiple application tiers to create, for example, a failover a scenario, but also to enable more load on the same Team Foundation server. You can also have multiple data tiers if you want, and you can just mix and match them if you want to as well. That creates a better redundancy scenario, so then you can fail over to different nodes. And there's also this support for data tier clustering, so that you can have high availability there as well. So next we have a set of build machines, and you see that one build machine is a little bit bigger than all the others, and that has to do with the fact that we have agents on a build machine, and we have the notion of one controller that can just say, okay, I want to pick this agent or that particular server, and then go and hand off the work and run the actual build. Now, the communication is done via the AT. So the application tier needs to be able to communicate with a controller. And the controller is then going to push the work to the agents. Okay? So AT handles in all incoming requests. Controller is the guy, thinking of, okay, where can I just push work out and have resources available? Now, one thing that's very important, and we come to that later on, is that the controller also does a little part of the work that needs to be done in the build. And this little part has to do with housekeeping. It needs to figure out where am I going to push the build, which agent is available, which build number am I going to use. Okay, so those kinds of things is the stuff that the controller still does. And if you have long work going on inside the controller, then that will block you from doing multiple builds concurrently. Okay, so that takes a while then to push off new builds. So be aware of the fact that you, if you make customizations, try to do them in the agent, and you will see later on where you can specify where you do what. So let's go through a cycle here, where we envision that the user in Visual Studio just clicks on, I want to queue a build. And let's see what happens. So we have a clear mental picture on what's going on behind the scenes. So first of all, there's this request from Visual Studio, which goes to the AT, I want to kick off a build. Okay, the AT then will go and will say, okay, I will find the controller that is responsible for this TPC. Okay, next, it will then go to the controller and say, I want to start this particular build. And this is the build definition information from which you can decide what to do next. So next what happens, and we will dive in a little bit deeper in this picture, is the controller will now start executing a piece of the workflow that we have in the workflow definition. Okay? And next, when it's done with setting up all the housekeeping stuff, it will say, okay, I'm now ready to hand off the actual dirty work to one of the agents. And it can see in the build definition the specification in which agent would qualify. That's been done by tagging mechanism. So an agent can have particular tags, and the controller will figure out, does this agent have a matching tag? If so, I can use that build agent to hand off the work. So for a given agent, it will find the available, for a particular build, it will find the available agents. and then it will kind of dehydrate the workflow, serialize it to the agent, and there it will get dehydrated into a new workflow again. Okay, so we kind of push it over to a different machine, which is an interesting thing that you can do with Windows Workflow Foundation just out of the box. This notion of this dynamic activity, you can just pass it a bunch of bytes, and it can then construct a new workflow out of that and then just do the work. Okay? And that's the way you can just push work to different machines, which is just a fun thing to do when you do Windows Workflow Foundation. They can leverage that technology, and that's what they do. Okay? So they will hand it off to a next available agent. So there, the actual work gets done. So there, you will get a folder where there's something going on with the build. It will pull the sources there. It will do the compile. It will do the tests. It will do, well, everything you've set up in your process template. Next, when it's finished, it will then say to the controller again, I'm done. And we'll hand off the work that's been done back to the controller. Okay? Next, there's a signal to the AT so that they know that the build is finished, and we can then show the build report. So that's what's going on behind the scenes during a build. Now, when we take a look at build workflows, we have a set of build workflows out of the box. So Team Foundation Server ships with a template which is used for upgrade purposes. So when you come from Visual Studio 2008 and you had this build which was completely created in MS Build, and you want to run that in a Team Foundation Server 2010 server, you have the upgrade template. And kind of what it does do the housekeeping, then go off to the agent and say, well, run this MS Build script. Unfortunately, they made some breaking changes in the way they created, well, kind of the build activities behind the scenes and the stuff that normally tied into MS Build. And that means that if you're using Workflow 3.5 in your projects, and you're using workflow rules there, for example, it might fail on you. And you need to convert it to a newer version. Okay? So that's one of the things I want to mention to you. When you do an upgrade, this kind of stuff might break. So for all the other stuff, we have the default template. And the default template is just the default work you would like to do in a build, which Microsoft thinks is the set of default steps. So get the sources from the source control, do the actual compile, do a test run on that based on test specifications that you have in your definition, and calculate some test impact analysis, for example, and that kind of stuff, and then push that back to the server again. Okay? So I want to show you in more detail how this default template now works. Now we know that the picture is that we have a controller and an agent doing some work. Okay? So if we take a look at the default template, we see that we first start off with this sequence, and I put behind on the left side the controller. This is work being done at the controller level. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to get the build, we're going to update what we call a drop location, we update the build number, and next we're kind of going to figure out where can we hand over the work. And handing over the work is done in what we call run on agent, which is a particular part in the workflow, which is called run on agent. And this is actually the stuff that gets pushed out to the agent. There it will just initialize variables, the workspace, create labels, compile, test, the whole enchilada. And next, when that's done, it will then hand it back to the controller. And there is where, for example, stuff like gated check-in is done. And I will come to that later when we dive into what we can set on a default build. Okay? Now, one of the things that's very important is that workflow has some basic ingredients that we need to learn before we can extend this whole thing. Okay? The basic ingredients of a workflow are, first of all, that we have the notion of a workflow, and within this workflow we have a set of activities. And those activities are composed together with what we call control flow activities, which can do a branch, for example, or do a loop, or for a while, or whatever you'd like. And this workflow can accept what we call arguments, so we can push data into the workflow before we start the workflow. Then we have the notion of variables, and variables are just, well, scoped within that workflow. So that's kind of where you can keep track of stuff you did previously in previous steps. It's compared like a blackboard, which you can calculate some stuff on and then keep it with you during the build. Okay? And then the activities, like I said, we have control flow activities, and we have activities that do work. Okay? Those are the things that actually do stuff. Control flow is just, well, making sure that it goes through the right path. Then we have the notion of persistence. And persistence is being used to just push out the workflow to the different agent, only in a different way. Normally, you can just persist it in a database, for example. And then what's nice about workflow is that when you have a workflow running and you have persistence configured, when that server crashes and it comes up again, it will auto-start the workflow for you at the point that it last persisted. So that's kind of an auto-start mechanism which you can have, which is just nice to have that resilience in place. The last thing that's very important in workflow, and we're going to need that very heavily, is the notion of tracking. So like I said, persistence is to make it more robust. When the server crashes, it comes up, and we can do the work that's been last persisted, or since the last persistence point. Tracking is used to enable you to figure out what the workflow is doing. So just all kinds of meta information on which step is this workflow now in, which activity is executing, that's being tracked by the tracking environment, if you configure that. The thing is that because you're tracking data, you can also think of that as being something like a build log in this particular example, because you know which steps are taking place. That's kind of your build log, right? And that's why tracking is used in extent within the build automation environment. Now, when we have just normal workflow out of the box, there's no way to communicate with Team Foundation Server. So what they've done is they say, well, we are going to push always one variable, or I should say one argument, which is called build detail. And build detail implements what we call iBuildDetail, and there we can query all kinds of information on, for example, what's the workspace set up, or what are the solutions that we want to build, or what tests need to be run, et cetera, et cetera. What is my build location, my drop location, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? So iBuildDetail is there for me to use in my workflow to query the Team Foundation Server, and tracking is what I use to communicate back where I'm at and what I'm doing. Okay. So let's first start with a basic build. So what I've done is in source control, I have a very simple metrics sample, which is just an application. Let me see, I will just open it up. And what I do here is just a very simple math example, just going to do math. And the idea behind this solution is that I normally can right-click and say calculate code metrics. And now I can get all kinds of code metrics information on this application. Of course, it's not very extensive, but it just gives you the idea what you can do with this solution. We can just build it, and then we have this final solution. But one of the things that we have in Visual Studio is that I can only right-click here and get this information. There's no way I can do that during build. And what I want to show you later on is how we can build and extend the template in such a way that we can calculate these metrics during a team build. Okay, so that's where we're going. That's where we're heading. So bear with me there. So this is the app I'm going to build. I'm going to switch back to my demo solution. And what I want to do first is show you Team Explorer. And in Team Explorer, I have builds. And in this build section, I set up a set of builds which I'm going to show later. But I want to show you just creating a new build definition, what's in there, okay? So you give that a name. So this is my Tech Days build. And next, I can set up what we call triggers, okay? And what kind of triggers do we have? Well, we have the manual trigger, which is you are going to push a button and then the build gets kicked off. So like I showed in the diagrams and the pictures. There's also this notion of continuous integration. And continuous integration means each time somebody checks in, within the workspace that's being set up for this build definition, a build will get kicked off. Okay. depending, of course, what you set up in your build definition, you will see that tests will run, or all tests will run, or parts of the test will run, depending on what you set. Now, when you have done continuous integration, you might run into a situation that you have more builds queued up than you can actually cope with on a daily basis because there are very regular check-ins, for example. And then you can say, well, I would like to do a rolling build, which means I will wait a certain amount of time and then queue up all those change sets and then send that off as one new build. Okay? Just queuing up some more stuff and then run a build each and every, for example, 50 minutes or so. Then we have the notion of gated check-in, and this is a whole new feature in 2010. And what we can do with that is set up, okay, in the version control system, I can say, well, this particular branch with software, I want to guard that. I don't want anybody just to check in any sources there. If they check in sources there, they first need to go through my gated check-in, which means they will just say, okay, you submitted this change set, I will, instead of checking in, queue it or set it apart as what we call a shell set, and then kick off a new build of the latest version plus that change set which you just created. When that build completes and is successful, it will check it in for you. Okay, so now you get a check-in on behalf of, yourself, because you submitted it. But it's kind of verification before you can check in, which is a very nice thing when you have many broken builds in your team, as one thing that you can at least keep the build running. Of course, you should do something about the culture as well, I think, if you have lots of broken builds, but that's another topic. The last thing I want to mention is the scheduled build. And I see that not many people use that, but we use it as kind of a life security policy for our code, you might think of. So the idea what we have here with scheduled build is we do have particular branches that we already released. And when we release the particular branch of software, we still want to run a build there each and every week. Anybody any idea which day of the week that is very particularly interesting for us? That is the Tuesday, because Microsoft always pushes the new software updates on Tuesday. So what we do is we first install all the updates that are pushed from the Microsoft environment and then run a new build against it. And that saved us some production issues with previous pushes we got from Microsoft. For example, regarding a 2003 server update where the whole WCF could not communicate with each other anymore. Okay, so that's one of the things you can use this for. And then set this check mark to build even if nothing changed, because particularly in those branches, nothing changes during the week. But you still want to kick off that build and have an early warning sign that, for example, in production, well, I shouldn't install that patch yet. Just make sure that gets fixed first, and then we will install it. Okay. So those are the options you have to kick off a build. And next what we have is workspaces. And workspaces have to do with version control. And this is where we set up these files I want to, pull in to my build environment and then run a compile across that. So what I'm going to do is just delete all this and say I want to create a new set of builds on my metrics sample. Okay, so this is kind of where I want to set it up. And I'm going to just run it in my build agent folder. So now I have set up this mapping. And I can set some build default. So if you have multiple controllers, you can just pick and choose one. This is very interesting also if you have branch office, for example, all over the world. You might want to have a build farm that's more near your own location. And you can just then pick a controller, which is, for example, in Amsterdam, or is in Dublin, or is in the US. So you don't kick off builds all of the time all over the world. And then have the drop folders copy it all over the network each and every time. Okay, so those are things that you can think of setting up a more efficient environment. So then I can say, well, this build copies output to the drop folder. I will just unmark that because I don't want to go through the network this time. And then next we have the process. And this is all about workflow. Okay, and here what we have is the notion of the default template. So the default template is now selected for this build. Now, when I just expand this detail thing here, I can see, okay, so this template is now going to be used for this build. And then when I click it, you will see that this is the default template. And when I double-click it, it will just open the workflow designer for me, and I can see what all happens within the build. Okay. Now, first of all, you might think, oh, well, that's not so much. when I have a look at the scroll bar, that shouldn't be too much, right? People who know and work with workflow will know that when I start clicking and start scrolling, there's this notion of like called auto-collapse or expand, and it will just keep expanding and expanding and expanding. And this is what all happens during a build. Okay. So what I showed you on my slides is just the summary of what happens here. Okay. And what you see here is that, well, at the end, we're done. And then we get stuff handed over again. Well, here, we're going to do indexing of sources. And, well, there's a whole lot of stuff. And here's the checked in on gated check-in, for example. Okay. So this is the default template. And what I will do is I will say, okay, I'm now done with this build definition. Only one thing I need to do, because otherwise my build will fail, is I unchecked this check mark for dropping the build on a particular location. And there's this notion of drop location. I can copy output to drop, and I will set it to false. So now I'm sure that that will work. And here you see that the items to build, I can just pick and choose any solutions, but it already figured out based on my workspace which solutions are in there. Okay. So now when I save this, I can just right-click this one and say queue new build, and it will then queue a new build on controller Marshall 5. So here you see the build now just got queued. It already got picked up because I see that the play button is there, and now you can see it does the run an agent, so we're already done with the controller work. We now handed it over to the agent. The agent is now doing its work. And it failed because there's no folder mapping. Okay. Well, shouldn't have deleted it all. But it's just to give you the picture, right? This is what normally happens, and this is how you set up a build. If you do it correctly, you won't get the error. So this getting us on the same page. So now we know all about team build, and now we're going to dive into how we can change it or break it or whatever you'd like. Okay? Well, breaking was not so hard. You saw that already. So like I said, it's just workflow. So when I want to extend this build, and the whole idea I have here is in this session to show you how I can extend this build to not only compile and test, but also calculate the code metrics for this particular application, I need to add something in that workflow. And that something is a workflow activity. Okay? So what we have out of the box in workflow is that we have a workflow activity library, and we need to add to that activity library a set of activities that come from Microsoft, which are particularly for the build. Okay? I put it on the slides there, but you don't need to memorize it. But you need to have the Team Foundation built client and the Team Foundation built workflow assemblies in your project references. Okay, so when you create a new workflow project, that's kind of what you do. You create a workflow activity library, then set those references. And those references can be found in the private assemblies folder. Okay. Private assembly folder is in C program files, then Microsoft Visual Studio 10, Common 7, IDE, and then we get one level deeper, and there we have the notion of public assemblies, private assemblies, and a whole bunch of goo which is in there. And the private assembly folder is where all the build stuff is as well. Okay. So what we're going to do is we create a workflow activity library, set those references, and next what we will going to do is create a new code activity. And this code activity just inherits from code activity and then can do stuff in its execute method. Okay? The idea behind all the activities in a workflow is that you just compose steps in a workflow, and each activity always has a well-known method, which is called run or execute. It's execute, sorry. Okay, and it will hand you over what we know as an execution context, and we can query that, for example, to get additional information. So next what we can do is define input and output arguments for our activity and say, okay, this activity, what would I need as part of the input? Well, I need to know where the build is. I need to know where the assemblies are. I need to know perhaps any thresholds I would like to set up for failing the build if my cyclomatic complexity is above a certain amount. The stuff that you can do with the in arguments. And the out arguments, you can just push information back to the workflow, which can be picked up by any other activity later on. Okay. We do this by changing the workflow template, which comes out of the box. I would not recommend try to create a new workflow definition just by yourself. It will take you a few weeks to figure out how to make that work, and just while dropping a new activity in there is a way easy way to do that. Okay. Now, because we create a new activity, there's some way that we need to inform the controller where it can find my custom assemblies. Okay, I just created this new activity, which is just a DLL, but this DLL is now on my development machine. So how do I get my DLL on all the build servers that are in my build rig? Well, the controller controls the environment, and it can just push off the information to the agents. And what we can do is we can now set up in the controller properties the location in version control where we store the custom assemblies. Okay, so when we build a new activity, we're going to take that assembly, stuff it in Team Foundation Server, and say to the controller, by the way, if you start a workflow and you need to know some new types, you can find them there. He will just pull them out to the build agent and to the build server, and it can then use those activities. Okay? If you forget this step, you will just get an error that it could not load the workflow, and the build is done. Okay. So let me create a custom activity first. And for that, I have demo solution 1. So I just close this one and go here to demo 1. So here what you see is that I created a project, just a plain project, which is a workflow class library. Okay, it's just using workflow 4, nothing special. And what we've done is I copied over the XAML template, which is normally the default build template. Okay, the reason I'm copying it into my solution is because then I get the full designer experience. If I would just open up the XAML and try to drag and drop my new activity in there, it wouldn't work. Okay, it will just fail and won't figure out which assembly my types are, etc., etc. So what I do is I always copy over the default template in my team project, and here I have my custom activity, which is just an activity which inherits from code activity. Nothing more, nothing less. And what I've done is I set up some references to Team Foundation Server. I set up a whole bunch, but this is just the workflow client and the workflow. Okay, you need those two. Because when you have these two, you get attributes like this, where we can specify where this activity can be used. So can this activity be used in the whole scope of the workflow? Or is it particularly only used for example, running an agent? Or only usable in running controller? You can just pick and choose there. Okay? I just selected the option all. What you see is that I have an in argument of text. Okay? And I have this overridden method called execute. And what I do here is, in order to get the data out of this in argument, I need to call my context and get the data out of there. That's just a workflow thing, okay? Because workflow, like you saw, can just be moved across machines. You can never assume where your variables are. It's just not a regular program where you just could access any static class which might have a variable. No, we need to push that forward using what we call an activity execution context. So what we do is to get the value out of this in argument, I'm going to ask my context, can you please give me the value from the property called this.text? And if so, that will be stored here in text. And next what I will do is debug write line and then hello from the build. Okay? I will just undo checkout. So I didn't want to change that. And that undo. And what I'm going to do next is show you right away how you can debug in this environment, because that's very important when you go start doing custom activities. You really want to be able to step through. So the best thing to do is go to the debug menu and then say, I would like to attach to a process. And which process would that be? Well, that would be the build process. Okay. So what we have here is something which we call the team build service host. And you need to check these both these check marks because most of the times this agent runs in a different security context, and you want to connect to that separate environment. So next I'm going to attach, and it will warn me, dude, are you really sure? Because this might harm your computer. I'm pretty sure it doesn't, so I will just say okay and attach. Okay. And now what you see is that I'm attached to the agent already. But okay, now I need to run a build that uses this activity. Okay. Now, like I said, I added this template over here, and when I open this template, you will see that I just added in this sequence hello build, and this hello build, when I just do F4, you will see that I have some properties over here. The in argument is this is the name, and I could enter an expression over here to just fix the data that is just outputted in that simple debug write line. Okay. So what I've done is in Team Foundation, I set up this demo one hello build. And if I go to this definition, you'll see that I selected my template, and this will just get run, okay? Nothing special there. So what I'm going to do is I'm now going to right-click and say, I would like to queue this build. And next what we should see is that in my debug window, you will now see that I just pop into my activity, which got activated, and now I can just see, okay, what was the text that got in? Nothing, because it didn't put any data in there, and it didn't push any arguments or connected any input arguments. And I just see the debug write line statement and be done. And in the meanwhile, you will see that this build will still run here. And you will see that hello build was over here. That was the activity that executed. Okay. So to recapitulate, I create an activity library for Windows Workflow Foundation. I copied the default template to my project so I can have full fidelity workflow experience for creating custom activities. I just build an activity by inheriting from code activity, specify any in arguments or out arguments I like, and do any work I'd like in my execute method. Okay? So that's the basic setup of such an activity. So very interesting. Now we can say hello from a workflow, which is, not very useful, I might think. By the way, one of the guys on my team just created a Twitter activity, so we tweet always what the build status is. It's just, well, okay. So the idea is that I could interact in one way with my complete build environment. So how do I do that? Like I said, we have this notion of variables which we can pass, and I get this build details variable in my workflow, which I could pass to my custom activity. So if I do that, I can just query for the I build details interface and then go about and ask all kinds of questions. Where are my build drops? Where are my binaries? Where did my assembly go? Whatever. Okay. If I would like to write information, then you need to do some stuff that has to interact with the workflow environment, okay? So writing is done by calling methods on the activity execution context. They provided some extension methods which just can be used against your execution context, which you got in when the execute is called. And you can call there, for example, success or failed or stopped or partially succeeded. So that's the way you can actually influence the build outcome. Okay. Now, what you also can do is just, I would like to add some additional information in there because I want to know what my activity is doing and if it might fail in a certain step or so. So I can just kind of, well, look in the log, what went wrong, so I can just fix it right away. To do that, I need to interact with the tracking environment within the workflow. Okay, and I can call track message, and there are special functions for that you can use. Okay, since it's nothing more than workflow, it's all about interacting with the tracking infrastructure. Okay, and doing that is done because you already set the reference to this workflow assembly, and there are the extension methods, and there you can do code execution context dot track build message. Okay. A track build message will track a message to the build log. And that will be shown in the default report. So there are multiple levels of diagnostics that you can turn on in a build. The default level is normal, which means that only high priority messages and normal priority messages will be shown. Only the high priority will be shown. Okay? You can have detailed output, and you can have diagnostic. And diagnostics is actually also showing which input arguments got into a particular activity, etc. But those logs can be very, very long. Okay, so that's the reason they got turned on normal as default. You can also set it to minimal, and then you will only get the actual errors. So in the bottom, you will see what are the actual calls that I did. Okay, so I did a track build message with just some text. Well, you will see that that's not shown in all the cases. Okay, when I set it to priority high, you will see that will show up in normal as well. Okay, and that's the way you go about. Okay. There are some short forms. You can also say, I would like to track a build error or a build warning, and then you get the nice exclamation marks set in the build report right out of the box. So when I take a look at my custom activity, and now I go to demo number two, so I will just say debug detach. I don't need to be attached to the debugger anymore. So here's the same deal. I just, used the same project. And what I've done is I used the same template, so you will see the exact same thing going on here that I will just say hello. Okay, nothing special there. But now in my activity, what I will do is I will just use some of the environment that's available to me. Okay, so I'm going to do a track build message. Hello, build. You see, I have this context over here, and this context now has this extension method. Okay, this is normally not in workflow, but just by setting that reference to the workflow from Team Foundation Server. Next, you see I do the different track messages like I showed in the slide, and now we can show I can show you that in a real build that's going on. Okay, so what I will do is we'll just go over here and go to edit build definition. And when you take a look at the build definition, you can see here the process. And what I can do is I can say log verbosity set to detailed, or I can set it to normal or to minimal or whatever I'd like. Okay. So when I set it to detailed, for example, and I will save this, and now I will queue a build. By the way, the setup is just exactly the same with the solutions, etc. Okay, nothing special there. But now when I go here, you will see that all the messages are shown. Okay? When I would do the same with, for example, minimal, save that and queue a new build. It. You see that one partially succeeded because I just reported an error. Okay, so that's the reason it will partially succeed. And here you see that I have the same error, but that's only the minimal this time. Okay, so now this is the way I can interact with the build log so that everybody knows what's going on within my activity without needing to debug or looking into text logs or whatever. This is the nice and easy way so that every build master can just use that. Okay. So now create something useful. Okay? We now know the basics, so now create something useful. So what's the idea? What I've done is say, okay, this cyclomatic complexity, depth of inheritance, all that kind of stuff, who's using that in his projects today? Only a few. So what you see is that knowing these metrics doesn't say everything, but it can at least help you with some smells in your code. Okay, if you have a cyclomatic complexity which is nearing to 40 or 50, you really need to ask yourself, okay, what's happening here? Because it can, for example, be a very large case statement, which might be okay, but on the other hand, it can also be a whole set of loops within loops within loops, which might, for example, already be something that might be a performance problem or something. So what Microsoft has done is they, in 2008, I believe, they already introduced this notion of code metrics by right-clicking on your solution and getting these metrics. You could export them to Excel, but still, I would like to know what's my code doing over time. So what I would like to do is run each and every build a code metrics activity and then know what is this information and push it, for example, into the TFS warehouse. That topic did not get selected for this tech days, unfortunately, but I also have a session which I sometimes give on building custom data warehouse adapters where you can just plug in additional data and build new reports around the TFS warehouse. And that's how you can make this a full-fledged interactive stack. So Microsoft finally decided to push out an additional executable where I could just run code metrics against any assembly I have in a particular folder. And it will just spit out the exact information I get normally in Visual Studio, but then put nicely into an XML format so I can read it very easily and just stuff it in a data warehouse, for example. Okay, so this metrics.exe is just an executable I want to just fire off, and then give it an input file and an output file so I just know where then the data is so I can just, well, analyze it later on and perhaps show pretty reports on it. So let's create a meaningful extension. So for that, what I've done is the following. You see that I created a solution, which is kind of the normal structure I use when I do these kind of extensions. And what I've done is I created the actual code metrics calculation activity in here. I used some different types over here, which I just separated out into a different assembly because those might be reusable across different things. And I will show you later why I'm going to reuse those assemblies later on for my extension of the build report. And next, you see that I have over here my template. So this is my default template. And I'm going to show you what I've done here, and then I will dive into the activity and what it does. So what I've done is, to the bottom, there's where we're going to do code metrics calculation. And here you see that I have a metrics activity, and this activity is over here. And this activity has the notion of a binaries folder. So where can I find the .exe file? Because it might be stored somewhere else on your build servers. Where is the build detail? Because I want to query Team Foundation Server and do some additional get some additional information out of there. Ignore generated code, yes or no? Because that might be an option you would like to pass on or not. And then the binaries folder is not the folder where the metrics.exe is. The binaries folder is where all my assemblies got built. Okay, so they first got compiled and built, and that's the folder I need to go through and find my assemblies and do the calculation. So I added it as a parallel task to doing test impact analysis and doing all the other stuff going on here with indexing of sources when you use the index server, the symbol server with indexing. Which is, by the way, very useful to use, and I would recommend doing that. Sorry, can't go into details because of the time. So this is the activity that I added. So let's dive into that activity and what it does. So here's the metrics activity, same name. And what I've done is nothing more or less than in the previous example. I just inherited it from code activity. And what I've done is I set up some in arguments, the binaries folder, for example, an in argument of type bool ignore generated code, yes or no. The build details I want to query later on, and the metrics location, where is the .exe that I can execute. So next I created a method called execute, which is the override which gets called by the workflow. And what I do is just create this results file, and then I do that by calling generate metrics. I just pass on the context, and here you see it's just the code activity context, and what I've done is the following. I created a list of files because I can do metrics calculations across any assembly that might be in that folder, so I just want to separate those out. And what I've done is say, okay, based on the metrics location, I'm going to find any file which is a DLL. And next what I will do is I will just set up this process start information and kick off just the process. I will wait for exit, And if the exit code is 0, I will add this file to my list of files, so I can just use that later on to analyze the data. Okay? And that's it. Nothing more, nothing less, but if all goes well, I should at least see the calculated files. Okay? So what I've done here is to show you that is I have here demo 3, which is this build definition. I used as the process template my default template custom 1. So default template custom 1, which is over here. Default template custom 1. You see that I didn't pass it any arguments yet. So it's kind of a fixed set of what I'm going to do now. And next you might want to extend it, and we'll show you later. And that's kind of it. So I'm going to calculate this thing, and next I would expect at least that I get some files where my code my code metrics calculation is done. So I'm going to queue this build, and we'll see if that goes through. So run an agent. It's compiling now. First we run the unit tests, which is good. Well, at least it didn't fail, so that's good. Now, you see nothing here, so I don't know what happened, so I can dive into the log again. And what you will see over here is that I've done code metrics calculation over here with the metrics activity, and nothing more than that, okay? So what I will do is we'll just pick up this location first, and I will just go to my build folder where I just built. There I go to binaries, and now what you see is that I have this XML file, which is just the metrics information, okay? So the maintainability, all the stuff in there, lines of code, class coupling, etc. So this is kind of the first step on creating this activity, and now it at least spits out the data. And now we need to do something useful with that and be able to control that, perhaps, when I just configure a build. Okay, so this is the slightly more useful variation of an activity. And we're going to dive into some more details. Okay, how can I make it customizable by my build master, for example? So what happens is when I take a look at the workflow template that I use, we already said that you could have arguments. Now, what's the idea is that in this arguments dialog, I can specify additional arguments I would like to have. And one of the funny things they added is that I could say, well, for this particular input argument, I would like to specify what we call a custom UI type editor, which is just stuff that's in there since .NET 1.0, I think, where you could use that for custom ASP.NET controls or anything else where you would like to pop up something that you want input from a user and use that as a value for a particular field which you have. Okay? And they use this infrastructure. So the only thing now I need to do is say, okay, I would like to specify some input which goes into this template and make some convenience for my build master that it can, for example, pick and select the location where metrics.x is, instead of just typing it in, okay? So what you need to do is just build something that is a type converter and implement in the added value a dialogue with your end user. Now, when I want to add some input, let's say, for example, that I would like to break a build if the cyclomatic complexity goes beyond a particular threshold, and I want to send a warning signal that the threshold is being reached or almost reached. Okay. So for that, what I could do is I can use the iBuildDetails value that I have and then say, okay, I would like to set the build status to be failed or to be partially succeeded. I can even stop a build. You can flag it as succeeded, but that can be overridden by anybody else, okay? So succeeded doesn't mean anything until the last activity completes, because if the last activity completes with success, then the build is successful. Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to extend this this experience now. And for that, now we need to do some additional work. And the additional work is as follows. First of all, I go to the code metrics calculation, And I already had some input arguments. But what I've done is I added some additional arguments, which are maintainability index threshold, the maintainability index warning threshold. So we got an error and a warning level that we can set. Okay. Same for cyclomatic complexity. And what I've done next is say, okay, I had in my execute method first this just generate metrics and have this result file, but now I will do some post-processing on that result file and say, okay, for each result in that file, I would like to load that code metrics report, and I would like to process those metrics. And I do that for each and every module I find. And processing those metrics, what does that mean? Well, it will just say, if the metric that's in there equals maintainability index, I'm going to compare it to a value that was my input value, maintainability error threshold. If that's the case, I would set the build as failed. Or is it the warning? Then I will say it to partially succeeded. Okay, that's what happens. So I'm going to influence the build status based on what I got from the XML reports. Okay, so that's nice. At least I can now influence the build, but how am I going to provide a UI for my build master that he can just edit that in his template? Now, for that to work, what you need to do is in your template, open up the template. What you're going to do is the following. You go to the variables and arguments, and if you go and have a look at the arguments, what you will see is that I just set up a whole set of arguments, which are maintainability index error, warning, error warning. The metrics.exe location is now something I can pass instead of just have a fixed value there. Okay. And what I've done next is say, okay, there's this notion of a metadata property over here. This is kind of a special thing because it will pop up a dialog here. And what I can do here is I can specify that my parameter metrics.exe.location needs a different display name, for example. I would like to add a category to my build grid, which I have. And I will just give some additional information. And here I specify that I have this custom type editor. And it's a required parameter. Now, what will happen here is I created in my types project this notion of a complexity editor. This editor is nothing more than just a WinForms thing. It can just do a just use the open file dialog to pick a file on a location on your disk. And what I created is a class called custom editor, which inherits from UI type editor. And what I do on the added value is just ask for a service on the service provider that just gets passed in here. I want to do something with the windows because I need to, well, kind of parent my window in some way. And what I will do is we'll just fire up the dialog I just created. And if that dialog succeeds, I want to pass the value back based on the dialog's location I got. Okay? So now this value being passed back out of this call added value is the result of the property that gets set in the property grid. Now, for this to work, you just set up a new build definition. So over here, go to the process template, use my new process template, and what you see now is that I have this notion of metrics over here, and you see here metrics.exe location. And you see miscellaneous, and I could very easily create a new category if I wanted to and just set this category on the other properties as well. And now I have set here cyclomatic complexity to be 15, 10, 30, or 50. Okay. So now this is the way my build engineer can just specify different values there instead of having it hard-coded. Now this metrics location was this particular thing, and now you see here the ellipses, and I can click that, and it will just sort of show my dialog. And now I can just pick a file location and then pass that on as the value. And that's over here. Okay? So that's the way you can make it way more interactive and way more nice for others to use instead of just hard coding everything. Now, the thing is that you might have seen is that I first created this project demo 4 over here, and I named this thing code metrics calculation, and named this thing metrics types. Okay. Now, what's very important here is I first ran this demo, but it didn't have all the additional stuff in there. So what I need is I need to make sure that these assemblies are now checked into the Team Foundation server. Because in all the other situations, I already had, in custom activities, set up a whole set of DLLs. So now I must replace those DLLs with this new version, so I have the type editor and I have the new threshold values and all that stuff that's used in the template. So what I normally do in my projects is set up a command file where I just go to a particular location and then say, okay, I want to copy over I want to check out my stuff and then check it in again, so I can just one click away, just do a check-in, check-out each and every time. There are people that just want to add that to, for example, build events over here, but then you get a check-in, check-out each and every compile, and I don't know if that's really necessary. Okay, so I have this additional command file I use. So what I do is I go over here as I open Windows location. I will copy this path. I have command line set up over here. So I will go change directory to this particular location. And what I will do now is I will do the check-in, check-out command. It will check stuff out. And if all goes well, it will check it in as well. So change that 75 and change that 76. And the last file is not changed. Okay. So now I have my new assemblies in there, so now I can run my new build. Okay. So go over here, demo 4, queue new build, queue it, and it's waiting. Don't know why. Did I kill the build agent? I will just have a look at the Team Foundation Server admin console, build configuration, see what my build server is doing. Well, it's up and running, so it should just pick it up. Right, there it is. So now it picks it up. And if all goes well, it finished correctly. So I can now go to the same edit and set, for example, I would like to set, now let's say I would not want to have a cyclomatic complexity more than 2. That will probably always fail, so I will just queue it again. Queue. And if all goes well, this build will fail now, based on the fact that the cyclomatic complexity is above 2, of course. Okay. So you can see that I influenced the build based on the calculations I did before. And that way you can just, it will just pass. That's cool. Not sure what happened there. Metrics activity, it did run. Okay. I'm not sure what happened there. I won't go debugging here in front of all of you. I sure hope that you know that this will really work in a situation where you're not on stage. So what you saw that my build completed, but the thing is that it then goes to the summary page. And the summary page is all nice and dandy, but it doesn't show any of my custom activity stuff I've done. Wouldn't it be nice if I could just change this and say I would just show some pretty pictures up there, which is the cyclomatic complexity and the stuff that I just produced. And this is something that you don't see often done, but there's a whole extensibility model behind the reports as well. So what I'm going to show you is how you can make that work. So to make that work, we need some additional information. Because all I've done up until now is say, okay, I'm just going to add some tracking information, but the tracking information goes to the default logs. What I need to do is, based on the work I'm doing, push data off to a data store, and then use that data again when I'm going to build up my report at a later time. Now, fortunately, we don't need to build our own data store. There's a data store in there already, which is the tracking store, but there's a different way you need to communicate to that store to kind of push custom objects into your built information. So what you need to do is, there's this notion of code execution context.track, and there I can just track any arbitrary information I have during my activity. And I can even say, I am going to create a type of built information record T, so that can be anything but wrapped kind of in a built information record, and then push that into the team build database. Okay? And I'm just doing that during execution. So instead of just doing a log message, I'm going to do a context.track, pass in the build details, and that data just gets stored in the database for me. Now, if I have that data, there needs to be a way to visualize that data in my report. And to do that, I can create a log visualizer. And a log visualizer is a Visual Studio add-in you create. And this add-in, onConnect, which is the call you get into when you create an add-in, you need to get hold of the IVS Team Foundation build interface. And if you have that interface, then you can say, I would like to register my own factories for a summary view and the details nodes that come by. Okay? So I can set up a new factory for each and every detail I have. And by setting up that custom type for myself, then I know for sure that I can render it in any way I like. Sorry for that. Okay? So I'm going to push additional data into the database, and now I'm going to pull it out with a log visualizer, which is a Visual Studio add-in. Now, what I can do there is I can use what we call the IBuildDetailsInformationNodeConverter, which is just a very long name for a thing that just converts it back to my data type. And then what I need to do is I need to construct, based on that data, a custom WPF paragraph. And I just push out that paragraph back to the report, and we'll show it in the way I'd like. Okay. Now, the hard thing is I need to learn WPF as well and figure out how you can show images which are embedded resources and all that kind of stuff. But I won't bore you with that. I just got the code for you, which you might want to use yourself. Okay? So that's kind of what you do. Then in the build summary view, which is a particular class, you have the notion of load data, and that's where you can get all the data from the database. And then in create section and create node, you create the section paragraph, and then you create additional nodes which you can show. And that will show up like this. So if you take a look at the report, the top part is always fixed. Okay? And then if you go into the details, you can say the priority of this node is, and I picked, for example, 99, which puts it on top of it all. Okay? If I use a lower number, you will collide with any other node that might be in there. It will just put it on the bottom of the other one. Okay? And what I've done is created a new section, which is now code metrics report summary, just a text. And I created a paragraph with some ugly images I could find on the internet with some numbers on there. But just to give you the idea, I'm not a designer to make it really pretty, but it's more the technology to enable this. Okay? So I'm going to show you that. So for that, what I've done is created the final solution. Always sounds good to have a final solution. So here what I've done is the following. I just kind of piled on what I already had. So I still have the input arguments, nothing going on there. I have the result file which I get from the generic metrics. Then I'm going to process that result. And now what I'm doing is I'm going to use a context.track. And here you see that I'm going to use the build information node, the build information record type. I'm going to pass it the metric summary type. And this is just a type I came up with myself, just an arbitrary POCO which you can just create yourself. Okay. And I pass it the value of a new metrics value, metric summary, and I just give it the module name because I'm in the module, I know the name. I know the cyclomatic complexity and just convert it to an integer just by using this very, nice link statement over here to get the data out of there. Okay? And this is just a link to XML, which I'm using to just go to the XML tree there. Okay? And there I have the cyclomatic complexity, depth of inheritance, and all the stuff that I have there. Okay? By calling this track method, I'm pushing this object into the build database. Okay. So then what I need to do is have a visualizer. Okay, so I run this build and now I need to visualize it. How I go about and do that? Well, for that, what you need is an add-in. So I created a build report add-in. And this add-in has this connect operation. And this is where I'm going to set up my custom stuff. Okay, so I'm going to query for the IVS team foundation build interface. And next, I'm going to query if this guy is around or not. Perhaps people don't have the Team Foundation tools installed, so they don't have that stuff in there. Next, what I will do is I create a new factory, which is called My Section Factory, which is for the section I am going to create. And then I have this activity tracking converter, which is the actual converter of each node. Okay. And I'm going to register that as well. So I have a details manager where I can register the summary view factory, and I have a register log view information converter. And those are now registered within the Visual Studio environment. And what I can do is just run this guy. What you see is that now I get the on startup command. So I'm just going to register my factory. If you're going to have a look at the factory, it's nothing more than just a class. Then the activity tracking converter. And I'm done over here. Okay, so now Visual Studio will just start up. By the way, I already created a build where the data is in there. I don't have the time left to run that build again. So I go to final demo. I go to, you can see that I rehearse sometimes. Here you see the final demo. And when I now double click this guy, you see that my add-in gets called again. And it will want to load the data from the database. So now I can get all nodes by type and I get the summary information. So I got two summary items because I got two assemblies. So I got two items that I can now show. And next what I will do is we'll create a new section, which is my section. So I just go F11. It will create the section. And then here you see the text that I will generate on the screen. Okay. Next, it will ask me to create node information. So for each node, I am going to create a paragraph. And in this paragraph, I will get the data from the metric summary I got during the load data. Okay. And next, what I'm just going to do is create I created a little method called addMetric. If I have 12 in that guy, addMetric does nothing more than creating a paragraph and then add an image with an URL. Okay. So when I'm done with that, it asks me, okay, what's the priority? Where do you want me to put this guy? I say 99. And now it will show up the metrics report in there like I showed on the slide. Okay. So I hope that with this session, you got a fair grasp of, okay, this is how Team Build works out of the box. This is what happens with the controllers, the agents, the workflows, etc. I showed you how you can create some basic activities. I showed you how you can extend that in such a way that you can influence the build by using the build details information. And I showed you how you can kind of expand the grid so it is nicer for your build integrator or your build user to set certain parameters or set certain locations. The last thing I showed you is creating a custom report even, and you can go completely wild with that if you want to. But I do hope that you learned new stuff this morning. I want to thank you for your attention, and well, have a nice day. Yeah.